Good morning. Good morning, New Haven. You're listening to Love Babs Love Talk on WNHH LP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio. This is Harry. Harry Droz. And that is Babs blue seat on the other side of the screen, if for anybody following us on Facebook. And for those in New Haven, I'm actually in the studio. So you're listening to us on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live from downtown New Haven. You know, so I'm actually in the studio. It's always good to come down to the studio. I'm actually, you know, I locked myself out the studio this morning. I came down at 8 a.m. I was here at 8 a.m. 8 a.m., Babs. Well, 7:55 to be exact.
Sorry, I had to go get my pizza out the oven.
Morning pizza.
Morning pizza, Harry. Like morning sex. Just good.
So I got here at 7:55, Babs. And I'm thinking, yes. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I had my Dunkin' Donuts coffee, which was bad this morning.
I was going to say, it must have been good because I didn't hear a complaint, but no. I spoke too soon.
It was really bad.
Please stop going there.
So I'm getting out my car and I reach for my keys to open, you know, my elevator key to turn on the elevator. And guess what? I have no keys. I left the key. You know, the funny thing is that my car keys hang right next to the office keys. But I'm no longer used to going to the office.
So you didn't grab them?
I didn't grab the office keys. I just grabbed my car keys. So, yeah. So I was here since 7:55. And, you know, I text Babs. Babs, I'm screwed. I'm out here by myself. But
and I have office keys. I just don't know where they are. Otherwise, I would have brought them to you.
Well, the only problem is that your office keys don't include the elevator key, right?
Nope.
You're right. That's the problem. I don't want your keys if I can't. If I have to walk 4 flights of stairs, I don't want them. So I called Norma, and Norma said, I called all of them for a few times. They finally, I woke them all up. And Paul doesn't have an elevator key either. Paul walks up the stairs every time. So I called everybody except Paul because I don't want Paul's keys either that don't include the elevator key. So anyway, so Norma finally said, okay, I'll be there by 9. And then Abelardo, her partner, called me and said, what's going on? And I said, I'm locked out. And he's like, don't you have keys? I'm like, of course I have keys. Like, well, where are your keys? Now I'm trying to explain, you know, the useless explanation.
The elevator keys.
So anyway, so he got here actually at 9 exactly. So then I'm here sitting down and I see how dusty everything is and I started wiping and I'm like, oh, I got to do a show. Forgot, you know, but.
No, it's nice of you. So what made you go in today?
But look at this, Babs. I got industrial strength, sort of like Clorox wipes.
Where are you going to keep those? Because you know, when you come back, they're going to be all gone.
I don't know. These come with me. I'm going to clean.
You're going to keep them in your car?
Yeah. I'm going to clean as much as I can. And that's another thing I left. I left my gloves.
Harry, you need to have a little, so, when you know, is this a whim that you were coming in today? Because it didn't seem like you planned for this.
No, I decided last night that I was coming in. I had planned it a little bit, and I knew what I had to bring. Actually, this morning, I went through a mental list. Actually, because Karen helps me go through a mental list. She goes, don't forget your wallet. Don't forget your keys.
I think you need a chalkboard list. Like, you need a board. you can see at the door.
Yeah, like if Karen was home, I wouldn't have forgotten anything, but she left before me. So I blame her. But yeah, so anyway, so I'm back in the studio. I think I'm gonna, you know, that's what I decided last night. I said I'm gonna start going in, I think, sooner than I thought. I was planning on starting coming in maybe mid June. But then yesterday I decided, you know what, I think I'm gonna start going in more often. And then this morning when I stopped at the gas station, it's over $3 a gallon.
Yes, Harry.
So that kind of pushed back my schedule again. I don't feel like paying for over $3 gas. And that's going to go up because of the interruption of the gas, the pipeline that got hacked.
Don't be one of these people, Harry, where you stocking gasoline in these containers.
No. I don't do that. You know, I don't have any...
Those people don't know that stuff is going to evaporate.
No. I wish I had a tank in my basement that I could fill and treat. But I'm not going to put plastic things all over my house and cause an explosion one day.
No.
No. But
this
still...
It's a temporary problem. And it's not even a problem yet.
Well, it's
people are just making it a problem.
It's over $3 a gallon. That's a problem. But that gas tank, I mean, the gas pipeline that got hacked and is offline right now, it's going to be a problem because, you know, they use anything to raise gas prices, any excuse. So, and this is a real excuse. They took the pipeline down, you know, so, and that pipeline actually, I think.
Yeah, runs from Texas to
the East Coast, right?
East Coast.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's
we're not out of gas. People stop. Those people in North Carolina are losing their minds.
Well, you know. Well, if some people do panic and they go buy all the gas at the gas station.
They're waiting in lines for no reason.
Some people do panic, but I mean, it is going to be a problem. Prices do go up for these things. So, I mean, we could... By mid-July, we may be at over $4 a gallon.
You know what? We're probably the only country in the world that is not at $4, $5, $6, $7 a gallon.
That doesn't make it okay.
When you're in Europe, Harry, people in Europe have been at this high price of gas for 20, 30 years.
That doesn't make it okay. That doesn't mean, hey, let's join the rest of the world and overpay for our gas.
Americans are just... crazy.
And we are the number one energy supplier in the world, so for us to be suffering this is crazy.
We're not suffering yet.
But anyway, yo, over $3 a gallon, that's some people are suffering. That some people budget what they can spend on traveling, you know. So so if they can't pay for their car, they're gonna have to go for the less expensive, take the bus and have to get up 2 hours earlier and then have to wait at, you know, leave from work at a certain time and hopefully their boss has left. Or if not, they're going to have to wait 2 hours more to get to a home. So it does make people suffer.
This is only day one, Harry. They're going to have it up before July.
No. But, you know, it lingers. The pricing, first off, is going up anyways. The prices have been going up. Where does it stop? We don't know. And you know, that's going to affect prices of airlines and what they charge per seat and everything. So I know a couple of airlines were already complaining about the jet fuel. So we'll see what happens. I'm lucky, I guess, that I paid for my tickets already. So if they go up, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because I'll be flying out mid-July.
And where are you going? Florida.
And by the way, people, we're off Memorial Day. I know we don't normally.
What is that? What is Memorial Day?
It's this month.
End of the month, right?
Yeah. We don't usually take it off, but I'm taking it off.
I'm off Thursday and Friday.
Yep.
I'm going to Martha's Vineyard for the weekend.
Sounds good.
My first real vacation in damn near 2 years.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's chilly. It'll be chilly on the vineyard, but I don't care. I have to go somewhere. I'm moving around pretty good. I like to do something before surgery resumes in September.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll have surgery in September, Harry, and I'll be out for another 2 weeks.
Go out, have some fun, take in, you know, the beach, the sun with the Obamas over there.
They don't come till late summer.
They're coming. I think I saw Michelle.
Wait, no, it's just a dog died, Harry.
Oh.
They feel some kind of way.
What?
Yeah, the dog died. Your dog died.
The family dog died? Some people,
yeah, Bo.
Some people Bo. Take that serious.
Yeah, it was sad. I mean, everybody was sad about it. I love that dog. If I was going to have a dog, that would be the dog I have. You know why, Harry? Because that dog does not shed.
You know, yesterday I saw a video, a security video, somebody who just like me, is videotaping everything in their house right now, even though I'm not there. Right? So, so he comes home and he has these two huge dogs who have torn the sofas up.
It's, oh my God!
Completely.
I'd be Cruella DeVille. Those dogs would be my coats.
But you see, I can't. That's the perfect reason why we don't have any pets.
That means those dogs were unhappy. They didn't like being left alone.
I don't know. The video that he showed, that he posted, they looked like they were having fun. Tearing up the apartment.
I mean, they weren't well trained, Harry.
That's seriously. Exactly why I don't have any animals. First off, cats are probably the most intelligent.
Cats just need their own space.
Right. They're very intelligent and they don't care about anything. They don't care. Well, they're a lot like me. They just want to be left alone.
Yeah, no, I'm like, I don't want any pets. I don't want anything that I have to take care of. I'm done. You know, after you parent it, you just... Mm-mm.
I see people walking their cats. It's the strangest thing.
I do, too. I see it, too. Because, you know, cats will disappear on you. I mean, they will.
Yeah, I guess. I think some cats need to be outside. If not, they're scraping up the side of your sofa. I bought my mother a recliner, and her cat tore that recliner.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy.
You see, that's why I'm not having pets. Like, I'm just, this is not my idea of. I just not anything I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying.
Yeah, my mother finally decided to get rid of the cat, and now she just has fish, which she says are very calming.
I don't have fish either.
I don't either. I think
my kids wanted pets when they were growing up. They wanted pets, and I was like, no.
Yeah, I don't want to have to clean the tank.
I just don't want pets. And here's the thing, all my children like pets. Like Margo works for a wholesale pet store, retail outlet. Gregory has a dog that he had over for the last couple of days because he's spent some time over here for Mother's Day. And I made him crate the dog because I don't want this dog running through my house. Because this dog is a puppy and it's just wild. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my kids love the pets. We tried. I had pugs. I had a German Shepherd. Got rid of them. Couldn't come home and have pee or poop in my house. I can't do it.
Well, if they're puppies, you got to train them.
And then my son had a lizard, which he called Greg. Which I found very strange. That's not a pet name.
Anything's a pet name if you call it.
And then when it died, he was like... And I was like,
well, you know, they love their pets. I was like, I get it. I just don't want pets.
I couldn't connect with his pain.
You know, Dr. Robert Brown is coming on in about two seconds. Is he in the dressing room? Is he in the hostage room?
You know this.
It feels like, you know, because I wasn't here yesterday. It feels like, today feels like, I don't know what, I feel out of sorts, Harry. Like, I feel very, and I didn't make it to physical therapy this morning because I didn't feel well this morning. Like, my stomach was very upset and I didn't want to get over there and have to, like, excuse me.
you know.
Who are you talking to? Somebody's talking to you?
They see me on the radio, but you know. This is the side effect of being in the studio. Everybody wants to tell you hi.
You gotta shut the door. Like, do you see me working here? I'm working here.
The good thing is that freaking dust. Anyway, the good thing is that I think everybody here at least has their first shot. So, okay. Actually, Norma has two shots. I think most of them are working on their second one. They should get their second one pretty soon.
Harry, I did send you the text about the folks today, didn't I?
About what?
I sent that to.
No, you didn't send me anything.
Oh my God! I must have sent it to somebody. Oh shoot!
Somebody said, "Yeah, and."
Oh my God! Where did I send? I could have sworn I sent that to you, Harry. Oh Lord, I don't know where. I don't know who I sent that to.
All right, so you should see him if he comes in also into the hospital.
Okay. Oh, Harry, so the St. Martin de Porres woman.
Actually, he just came in.
Okay, I see him. I have to tell you the funny story about this. I'll tell you it later. Harry, wait, she said she never got the link. I'm like, we saw her on.
Oh, do you? Oh, yeah, she did come on.
But she said she didn't.
Do you have a hour two guest?
Yes, I do. Carlos.
Send me that.
Yes. Damn it, where did I go with that information? All right, I'll make sure I get it to you.
All right, I'm gonna let Dr. Brown in.
Okay.
You're listening to Love Babs Love Talk on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio. I sound better in this mic.
You do. No, you do.
So here we go.
Hey, Dr. Brown.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Oh, it feels weird. I wasn't here yesterday. So it feels strange to be back in this seat because it feels like a very long time away.
Oh, well, I hope you had some pleasant days.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, I had to go run some tests yesterday. So that took up my day. But other than that. Mother's Day was good. Is your mother still alive?
Yes, she is, thankfully, yes. So I spent the day with her.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice. My mother has passed, and so it's a little strange still every Mother's Day.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
That's all right. You know, it's been she's been gone a long time, but, you know, when it's your mother, it just feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you since the last time I saw you?
I'm better. So, I'm better. And, you know, everyone has to be renewed periodically, especially when there can be sort of a piling on of different kinds of issues. And we all need a break from time to time, and just to be able to sit and be still and sort of gather
I'm
ourselves.
I'm leaving for Martha's Vineyard on Thursday.
Oh, wow. Good for you. Okay.
So I can go sit and be still for a long weekend.
Yeah, that'll be great.
It's my happy place. Yeah. I love that place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
I wish I had money. I could buy me my own space on the beach. Like,
yeah.
I could.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the way to go, Dr. Brown, to take a break from all of this, because I found myself drowning in despair. Like I felt it. I usually don't get that way, but it just seemed like one thing after another, you know, on top of COVID.
Yeah. It's been happening to a lot of people. I was, talking to, a good friend, and we've known each other for more than three decades now. And, she was expressing a very similar sentiment, how she was not able to loose herself from that kind of feeling of foreboding and wondering what's going to happen next, and thinking about her son when he's out of the house and all of those kinds of things. And it's really been pretty amazing. And I don't think people in our generation ever thought that we would be here, because, you know, we were the beneficiaries of what our parents gave us, who were, you know, the people fighting in the trenches during the civil rights movement to a great extent. And so our generation was not only supposed to be the beneficiary of that effort, but also supposed to be able to pass on things in an even far better way to our children and grandchildren. And yet here we are, seeming back where we were, you know, 60, 70 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a time. And I purposely didn't look at the news yesterday, and I can't tell you how much better it made me feel. But I did peek in for just a second right before I logged on, and it's the same old stuff. And you see the levels of hypocrisy among far too many people in positions of leadership who have absolutely sold their souls for the purpose of retaining what they believe to be power. And there's so many people now who are suffering in this country. You know, I was thinking about my students the other day. It's finals week. And I was thinking about, really, I'm just focused on college students because I'm a college professor. Really, the last year and a half has been lost, Babs, to a lot of young people. So I think about, how are we going to make provisions so that they can be caught up? But what tends to happen is that never happens. So the folks who have been behind fall further and further behind. And life goes on as if there was no hiccup there. So it's really quite troubling. And I've seen the level of burnout in these students. Many of the students are just out of capacity. And, you know, talking to one student and saying that there's no quiet place in his home to do his work. There's none, because he lives in a large part of a large family. They have a small place, and there's no room to really focus on studies.
So, you know, so going to school really was, I mean, actually physically going to school was a good thing for him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really a respite. And the other piece of it is, you know, this young man would log on to class via his smartphone.
That has been a lot of stories.
That simply doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So he's in a situation where he had to actually borrow his a family member's laptop to do assignments and take exams and that kind of thing. So what this pandemic has revealed are the glaring gaps, the differences based on communities and location and social class and all of those kinds of things. But when looking at some of the relief that is headed our way, it's really important to have the people and voices at the table if we're really talking about things like racial equity and an even or more even distribution of financial resources and other services, so that the people who are the most impacted are made a priority. And that doesn't mean that other groups aren't served as well, but typically what we tend to see is that the least of those are the last thought of, if they're thought of at all. So there is a real opportunity, but I just hope that the state, local, and federal government will really be willing to understand the severity of the issues, the complexity of the issues. And one of the things that I mentioned in the article I wrote a few weeks ago was that there really needs to be this focus on cultural awareness. And I spent some time thinking about that, because
I was going to ask you to unpack that, because that can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, well, I used the research we did for State of Urban Connecticut as an example, a case in point. So, as you know, there were a series of scholars from different disciplines who were charged with developing the various sections of that report: education, employment, income, affordable housing, health disparities, immigration, transportation, and then reentry justice. But what we knew, Babs, was that we did not have all of the answers. We did not know all of the information. And it was absolutely essential that we be able to form alliances with stakeholders in the communities that we canvass, who would be willing to vouch for us, with the residents and community leaders mm-hmm. of those spaces, in such a way that they would allow us to come into their lives and speak with them about the ways that these issues were affecting them. But it was really a collaboration, because we knew that if we did not get the information from their point of view, in addition to our knowledge and expertise in these areas, it would have diminished the quality of the report. And this is what cultural awareness helps us to do. It helps us to understand that there are different ways of looking at the world. There are different ways of looking at issues. So when we think about cultural competence, we're now looking at differences that can be based on race, ethnicity, social class, location, religious affiliation, and the like, in such a way that we use those attributes as assets to help us be better providers of services, and also with the understanding that we have to look at the issues not from our perspective, but from the perspective of other people based on their own lived experiences. But in addition to cultural competence, the really sought after place is what I call cultural humility. And this was actually a concept that was developed by two medical doctors in the late 1990s. And what they saw was that there wasn't just a need for being culturally aware. That is, the ways in which other groups of people different from your own live, their perceptions, their values, and belief systems. Bringing that understanding to an engagement or an interaction. And if we put this in the context of, say, a healthcare provider and a healthcare recipient. But they also saw that there was a need to go even further than that. And what they developed was this term called cultural humility, which espouses the belief that it isn't just important and necessary to understand a person's perspective from their own position, but it's also important to understand the history of that person's position or that group's position, so that now you are bringing to bear a far more nuanced and granular understanding of why certain issues may exist within certain groups that is not only based on current circumstances, but also based on history. Mm. So if we look at the impact of the healthcare system on the Black community, that is a prime example of why we need to be as culturally aware, culturally competent, and as culturally humble as possible. We're still talking about the issues of hesitancy and getting the vaccine, which is very well founded. And before I go further, I'd like to just show this to you. This book is called Medical Apartheid. I don't know if
you know this book. I know this book. Yes.
It is written by Harriet A. Washington. Mm-hmm. This is an historic and comprehensive analysis of the impact of the U.S. healthcare system on the Black community going back to the 19th century. And I use this as a reference because we've been speaking a lot more about the history of abuse of Black communities by the healthcare system, given the advent of the vaccine. We've talked about things such as Tuskegee, the syphilis experiment, which was a longitudinal study led by the Public Health Service, began in 1932 and went to 1972. We've spoken about Henrietta Lacks, who was a Baltimore resident in the 1950s, who had unfortunately contracted cervical cancer. She goes to Johns Hopkins University. She's treated by a physician there who harvested her cells, cervical cells, without her permission or consent. Those cells continue to be used to this day in a number of medical advancements. We can speak about the ways in which someone that we may know had a negative experience with a healthcare provider last week.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go back to this issue of cultural humility, it's about bringing that knowledge forward from an historic perspective to inform a healthcare provider's understanding as to why there may be hesitation in the Black community, why there may be fear, why there may be perceptions that, well, if I am infected with this vaccine, what's going to happen to me? So these are very real concerns, and that's why you've seen a movement across the country to address these very real and valid issues. One of the people that I didn't mention was actually a president of the American Medical Association in the late 19th century, and his name was J. Marion Sims. He was, and still is considered by many, to be the father of modern gynecology.
Yes.
But what some may not know is that J. Marion Sims committed a series of barbaric experiments on enslaved Black women without the benefit of anesthesia, even though anesthesia had been invented. His belief was that Black people were a subhuman species and therefore had a much higher tolerance to pain than whites. And so in addition to the barbarity of the experiments that he meted out to Black women, he also promoted what is called scientific racism. So we have to look at all of these things in the context of why there are significant numbers of people in the Black community, as diverse as we are, who have serious reservations about taking the vaccine. And these are issues that we need to talk about openly and honestly. So for those who are part of the healthcare community or other types of providers who are giving services, they need to understand this, but there also needs to be a level of historic knowledge to help inform the ways in which they might be more effective at providing outstanding services to any community.
Wow. So, Dr. Brown, do you feel like the window on these kinds of conversations are closing, or do you still see the opportunity? I don't sense the same heightened awareness that I did at the beginning of this pandemic, when people were just astounded by the disparities and inequities in the healthcare.
But we have to keep beating that drum. Okay. And I think what tends to happen sometimes is we have a very short attention span. So there'll be an issue of great significance and importance that is all the rage on social media, you see, and other types of engagements to discuss these matters. And then 2 weeks later, it's as if, well, what just happened? So mm-hmm. This is an issue that we need to continue to promote and discuss. And this is why, when we talked about this a few interviews ago, we talked about the ways in which our own Black organizations can be brought to bear and work in a far more collaborative and effective manner by looking at the ways in which our community can be better served as it relates not only to the dissemination of the vaccine, but also the ways in which the dollars that are coming down to address some of the issues that have resulted because of the pandemic can be utilized effectively, efficiently, but also in a manner that promotes equity. So this is an ongoing conversation that we need to have, and we also need to apply pressure to policymakers and decision makers to ensure that the deployment of these funds and services are going to be equitably distributed. And in the process of those decisions as to how those funds are going to be distributed, we need to have the residents and community leaders, as well as stakeholders of the places that are going to be served, at the table as well. Because what sometimes can happen is that the very people for whom the services are intended never have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? There is a lack of cultural awareness, competence, and certainly a lack of cultural humility. So it is important that shows like yours continue to beat this drum until we can see tangibly that it isn't just a function of the rhetoric that we hear, but it is also a promotion of the deeds that we see as it relates to the actions and the deployment of the resources, services, not just now, Babs, but for the foreseeable future, which means we have to continue to hold people to account for the next 3 to 5 years, because the issues in our communities did not just happen as a result of the pandemic. These have been longstanding issues that have existed prior to the pandemic, but that have now been made far more glaring because of it.
Mm. I think you make a good point, and I'm starting to sort of see folks from the community say they want a great deal more transparency. They want to know about the allocation of these resources, particularly these federal dollars that are coming into these communities and coming to these hospitals and coming to these municipalities to sort of help do some of this work. Like, people want to know where this money is going, and they want to have a say in how it is utilized.
Yeah, and they have the right to that level of transparency. But the other thing too is another mechanism of accountability is to measure, right? To measure the deployment of the resources and the services. Are the resources and services reaching the populations that are most impacted? Are those resources and services being effectively deployed? And we can do this through evaluations. We can deploy what is called a process evaluation, which is where you are measuring the implementation of a service or a program as it is in process. And then the outcome piece of that evaluation is where we've actually measured what happened. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a great understanding as to, on the process side, do we need to make adjustments as we go? So let's say, for example, that our target audience was 500 people per week as it relates to information about the vaccine. Well, through a simple process evaluation, quick data collection, we find that we're only reaching 170 people. So that means that with that information, we can now make the needed adjustments to reach our goal of 500. And I'm just using that as a very small example. But we can't have these resources made available to us and not know exactly how effective and efficient the deployment of said resources are for the communities that are being targeted and impacted the most severely.
So here's my real fear that as people move through the vaccination stages, that we will still lag behind in vaccinations, and that the face of the pandemic will become wholly black and cease to become a real topic of conversation because it'll be black. I mean, I saw this with the HIV and AIDS, you know, when I was working on the front lines in those days, when it was white and gay, and then it started to get, you started to see it shift, become black men. And then in the end, it solely became about black women and children, you know, and then it just sort of, the conversation kind of dissipated.
So
people are still on the front lines doing this work. People are still, I mean, we are nowhere where we were at the height of this thing in the 80s, but it's still very, HIV and AIDS is still very much with us.
Absolutely.
There's no cure for it.
Yeah.
It's managed, mm-hmm. but people are still being affected and affected by it. And so my fear is that this pandemic will be still left in our communities at numbers that, you know, will harm our neighborhoods in ways that we are starting to see, and I'm at a loss at how to combat that. Like, I'm at a loss at what resources are needed to combat that, and how long can we combat this?
I think that for endeavors such as this one, which is quite significant. We have to be able to do two things, more than two things, simultaneously. So as we are addressing the issue of COVID-19, the vaccine, the economic crisis that's resulted, there has to be a simultaneous conversation about race and racism in America. And in so doing, what it will help to do is expose the generational impact of racism in this country from its founding to the very present. So if we're able to simultaneously address the issues of COVID-19, the economic crisis that's resulted, but also the legacy of racism in this country and its horrible impact on Black people, other communities of color, and certainly Indigenous people, it will help to peel away some of the, I think, trepidation that you are expressing about, well, this was the flavor of the month for a couple of months, and then it just went away, and we were, what, left to ourselves yet again. And this is why it's important to begin to mobilize people now for the election, the midterm elections for next year. We can't start to think about that in January 2022. We need to start mobilizing right now. And we also have to make sure that our elected leaders understand that they are going to be held accountable, that this is not going to be about attending the church service at a Black church and having a chicken dinner and having a photo op, and then we never see you again. But there's going to be far more substantive accountability required if you, in fact, want to vote. Mm-hmm. So we have to triage this. We have to look at what is most pressing, and that is getting the vaccine into as many arms as possible. We have to look at ways of righting the economy, but we also have to look systemically at how we have gotten to this place and how the pandemic has exacerbated all these things with especially harsh effects in Black, brown, and other communities, and certainly poor communities as well. While we are looking at the issue of race and racism in this country, so if we are able to do those things more effectively, then I think it will help to alleviate some of the, rightfully so, concern that you have about, well, how long is this going to be of significance to the larger community? And then how soon will it fall back on our shoulders in the Black community to try to make these things right?
Yeah, that's, yes, exactly. That's what's on my heart and mind.
Yeah.
Although I do see a level of mobilization that I haven't seen in a very long time across this country. I mean, I see it not because of the pandemic, but in concert with the pandemic in terms of leveraging political power. I mean, we've seen it in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And now that these legislatures are trying to, stop voting, people are mobilizing to get around these new legislative shackles for mm-hmm. voting. And they understand that they have to do that. So that's in tandem. But then you overlay this pandemic, and I mean, it just always seems like so much that has to be overcome to get to just a place of parity or where we can just live like people.
Yeah, and that's why I say we've got to look at this as a triage. You know, there's the immediate, what do we need to do to stabilize the community? How do we first stop the bleeding? How do we stabilize? And then how do we focus on wellness? And so this is going to be a protracted effort for some time. And this is why mobilizing our communities, our community leaders, our stakeholders, our organizations, faith-based organizations too, is really going to be important, because it is necessary for us to give leadership to those who are well-intentioned but who may not know exactly how to best deploy the resources that are being made available. And this is why I say it's really important to have people like you at the table, other community leaders, stakeholders, residents as well, who are helping to guide and frame the conversations about how best to utilize the resources now and in the foreseeable future. And one of the people that I speak about very, very respectfully and lovingly is the woman that I refer to as Miss Mamie. And Miss Mamie is that individual who has lived in the community for over half a century, most of her life. She runs a small nonprofit. She has an encyclopedic knowledge of the issues and concerns of the people that she serves, but she lacks the horsepower of some of the larger, more recent organizations that have come into some of our communities who lack the cultural awareness, the cultural competence, the cultural empathy, and certainly the cultural humility. And it's people like her that definitely need to be at the table when these conversations or as these conversations are being had around how can we best serve the people in these communities and how best can the resources that we have available be disposed in those efforts. And I think that because of the pushing of the Miss Mamies in our communities into obsolescence, this is another person who is such an icon and a valued resource in our community that is often unheard, who is often ignored. So it's important to have people such as her on shows like yours so that she can have her say. And I think about women such as Fannie Lou Hamer, that giant of a woman who lived in Mississippi, and she was the unfortunate victim of what was called a Mississippi appendectomy. And a Mississippi appendectomy is an abortion without the woman's permission or consent. And this is what happened to her. And so when we look at the legacy of the impact of the healthcare system on America, we have to look at instances of what Fannie Lou Hamer did, who went from a very hard life in Mississippi to the halls of Congress to testify, and all of her brilliance and eloquence. Now, this was a woman who was unlettered, but she was an absolute genius as it relates to what she was able to accomplish. So my reason in mentioning Ms. Hamer is because there are any number of geniuses in our communities, Babs, that never see the light of day. And it is because they are made to feel that they have nothing to contribute, that they have nothing to offer, that they have nothing of value. And what I'm here to say is that you do indeed have something of value. So it's important that we position folk like this who may feel that they have nothing in spaces where their voices can be heard too. Because it isn't just about having a bunch of academics sitting around the table talking about these issues. It is absolutely essential that the folk who typically are ignored have their say. And that is one of the things that we were able to accomplish with the state of Urban Connecticut. I made sure, in fact, that we talked to the people who felt like no one wanted to talk to them. I said, no. What we're going to do here is we're going to, with permission, of course, engage the folk who feel like their voices don't matter, because those are the people that I want to hear from. Mm-hmm. And it is because of that that the quality of that report is what it is. So it's an opportunity for us to engage people around these issues in ways that we have not done in a very, very long time. But it is going to require people who are committed to hearing the truth, Babs, people who are committed to hearing the truth. And that is one of the most difficult things for some, to hear the truth. It's time that we stop acting as if things aren't as bad as they are. They're bad, but it doesn't mean that they can't be made better. And this is an opportunity for us to get it right for once.
This is a quite hopeful conversation, Dr. Brown. I feel quite hopeful now.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. I was thinking about you on Sunday, because when I was driving down to see my mother, and I left early in the morning. It was after 4 a.m. So who was I playing? Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's who I was playing. So I thought about you. I said, you know, Babs would get a kick out of this. I was actually playing the Gratitude live album from 1975, one of my all-time favorites. Yeah, so, yeah. But I digress. Yeah.
That's about the right time of morning you ought to play that.
Yeah.
No, yes. I'm going to play some when I get off air. Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. This was a good conversation this morning, and I know that people that listen to this conversation enjoy it immensely, and they take it into their spaces, these kinds of conversations. So thank you.
It's one that needs to continue to happen. It doesn't, and not necessarily with me, but it's one that we need to continue to have in our communities.
Yes.
Because if we don't, then no one else will.
And I will say this, but as I look across the social media universe, I am seeing these conversations pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not the only one having these conversations. Like, lots of people are having these conversations, you know, in these Zoom formats. And you know, as much as these Zoom formats are exhausting, they are a great way for all kinds of people to get together. Because sometimes you can't gather all the kinds of people you want into a space because of time and convenience.
Right. Logistics,
so this really allows people to sort of get in on a conversation that they otherwise would not be able to participate in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree.
So there is some goodness about that. And the fact that people can go back after the fact and take in the conversation.
Sure. Yeah. So it can become a tool.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Yeah. So I've been seeing a lot of that. I've done a lot of that. Like, if I've missed a conversation, I can go back and jump in and listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, oh, okay, and that's been really good, because if you miss a meeting, you miss it.
That's it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but you can catch. But in this medium, you can go back and really take it in. So, but anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Glad
to be here.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
And I know you'll be back.
Yeah.
Tuesdays are for Dr. Brown.
Yeah.
So next up, I'm talking to the Connecticut Working Parties. That's my next guest. And we're talking about the bill that's running through the state leadership. About workers' rights. Like, New York has this lawsuit against Chipotle.
Yes.
For, you know, having people come to work and then telling them, oh, we don't have any work for you.
Yeah.
And they leave, and then they could call them back again for closing, or, you know, it's just not a way to sort of.
Yeah, no. No, and this is why the reintroduction of unions is so important, and that's a conversation that some don't want to have. But workers deserve to be protected. I mean, people need to have decent rates of pay, decent and safe working conditions. And so I know I don't want to bleed into the next segment, but yeah, I'm glad that's happening. I'm glad you're going to have that conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to have that conversation. I'm looking forward to it. And I want to hear more about it. I had no idea this was a overarching issue for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've worked retail. I've worked places and things when I was younger, but I had no idea that this was so much so that the state of New York is suing because this is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, so Connecticut doesn't have anything in its laws to speak to this. And so they're raising it to be preemptive. So there we go. But anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Brown.
Enjoy
your
welcome.
Day. You know, take it easy on those finals with these young people. I'm not saying make it easy. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's already happened. So.
So you're in grading mode? Are you in grading mode?
Yeah, I'm in that mode now.
Oh Lord. Yeah. Well, I've got some Kentucky Derby. Bourbon, if you feel inclined.
How's that working out?
I haven't even cracked it yet.
Really? Okay.
Okay. So much. Let me tell you, it's ridiculous. Okay. So, but thank you so much. Say hi to your wonderful partner, Val.
I will.
And I will talk to you soon.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right. Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you.
All right.
All right, Harry. I don't know where you are, but I know you're close by. It's always a pleasure having Dr. Brown on. He's so smart. I always feel like when he's on, Harry, it's a master class for me. Even though I have a couple of master's degrees, it feels like a master's class. Just saying. Okay, you're muted, Harry. Why are you cleaning off the microphone?
Hello? You hear me?
You're muted.
I'm muted.
You are muted. You are muted. You don't know where to turn. Oh my God. Woo, you would think we weren't doing this for 4 or 5 years. You thought we just
Hello?
We just showed up yesterday and said, hey, let's do a radio show. I'm here and you're here. So
you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Woo.
You were muted.
Well, you know. I was cleaning. I must have hit the mute button. It's a lot to clean.
Clean, clean, clean. Clean, clean, clean. See how they clean.
Oh, let me stop that stream with Dr. Brown and we'll restart another stream.
Okay.
I mean, we're still on the radio, so.
Yes, we're still on the radio.